Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And under Joe Biden, we've gone from Democrats trying to tell us that America is 1965 Selma to America is 1921 Tulsa. That was essentially my takeaway from President Biden's remarks on the 100th anniversary of the massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. This is what Joe Biden said about your country.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland today. Not ISIS, not Al-Qaeda, white supremacists.
Keeping it going, huh?
And hearkening back to 1921 Tulsa to make the argument about 2021 America, which I think is a difficult one to make. Joe Biden recalled this.
If my memory is correct, there were 37 members of the House of Representatives who were open members of the Klan. There were five, if I'm not mistaken, could have been seven, I think it was five, members of the United States Senate, open members of the Klan. Multiple governors were open members of the Klan. Most people didn't realize that a century ago, the Klan was founded just 6 years before the horrific destruction here in Tulsa.
Did he fear to my end? Those Klan members were all Democrats.
Like his good friend, the late, great Robert Byrd, who Joe Biden lauded during his time in the Senate, who was essentially a recruiter for the Ku Klux Klan. Oh, I know he made amends for that later in life, but it's funny how charitable the Democrats are to their own. Robert Byrd can make amends for his past transgressions later on in life when he becomes a member of their caucus. But America can't make amends for her past wrongs, and people who had nothing to do with those past wrongs have to continue making amends, apologies, being berated for things they had no part in and things they want no part in. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Why do you think that is? Why do you think it is that Biden wants 2021 Americans to believe that we're still 1921 America, 1921 Tulsa, to be specific?
Because he's keeping the whole January 6th insurrection, you know, that we've got white supremacists among us that are trying to take over, which they're not. Those were a bunch of goofballs, and what happened was horrible.
Well, forget January 6th. This is bigger than January 6th.
Well, it's about keeping Trump down and making sure that Trump doesn't run again for re-election.
This is bigger than Trump. Why do Democrats want America to believe it's 1921 Tulsa? This precedes Joe Biden and has just been exacerbated under him.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a good question. A quick question.
Oh, you can ask a good question.
We do appreciate a good comment. Yeah, we appreciate that.
Joe Biden also, too, the other thing that really should be taken away if you didn't watch or you didn't catch this clip, the continued infantilization of Black Americans. The two are complements to one another. America 2021 is just Tulsa 1921, and Black people are being held back by the white man. They need the white man to do something for them.
The data shows Young black entrepreneurs are just as capable of succeeding given the chance as white entrepreneurs are. But they don't have lawyers. They don't have they don't have accountants, but they have great ideas. Does anyone doubt this whole nation would be better off from the investments those people make? And I promise you, that's why I set up this National Small Business Administration that's much broader, because they're going to get those loans.
I mean, how appalling at what he said. I turned it off after that. I can't even watch him anymore. He's disgusting.
He's just reaching, grasping. He's appealing to the sentimental barbarians in America who want to feel good, feel like they're being compassionate to their fellow man while they're denigrating their fellow man, while they're infantilizing their fellow man, and while they're saying things that are so patently false and ridiculous they should be ashamed of themselves, but they don't have the capacity for shame. Black entrepreneurs are being held back because they don't have accountants and lawyers. Are only white people accountants and lawyers in this country? Are white accountants and lawyers unwilling to work with black entrepreneurs? Is that a thing?
According to him, it is. I mean, what year is this? My God. I mean, if I was African American and black, I would be appalled.
It's 1921 Tulsa. That's what
and
year
I'd be
it is.
Highly insulted. And it's not going to stop. And did you hear the latest now? Vice President Biden has tapped Harris now to lead the effort on voting rights. She's been taken off border duty now.
She's multitasking.
Oh, okay.
I mean, since these are just honorifics, I mean, yeah. Why not just pile on the titles? I'm the point person for this. I'm the point person for that. You know where he learned that from?
Obama.
His time as that person for Obama.
Right.
I remember not having to do anything, and yeah. I just had all of these assignments, and I never had to turn any homework. Well, I can do that for my vice president, too. That's how we do it.
Yeah, we go to funerals
in the Joe Obama administration.
We go to funerals of world leaders, and then we'll do little tasks that they assign us.
But I mean, really, that statement. I mean, the white supremacy is the greatest threat, boogeyman stuff is that's customary. Black entrepreneurs have good ideas, but they can't get those good ideas to market because they don't have lawyers and accountants. Marty in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, good morning. I know we get on so quick. Did you say that I just turned on it? Biden said black entrepreneurs can't get lawyers and can't get accountants.
Yes.
Yes, he did. He did say that.
Yeah. They have good ideas. They can't get lawyers and accountants.
Many people like me are business owners that listen to this early in the morning that have been doing this for 25, 30 years. We make good livings, but we still work. I mean, but I can't believe anybody would – I don't know. I don't even know what to say.
It's stunning. It is
unbelievable.
I turned it off. It just reminded me of, you know, the Georgia voting law when they were going through that, like, as if black people, they don't know how to get to the DMV to get a driver's license.
Right.
I mean, it's just insulting. They don't know how to log on and use a computer because of the color of their skin.
They don't
Who's
have
perpetuating
computers?
This bull jive?
Black people don't have computers.
Right.
In America.
And they don't have lawyers or accountants, Dan.
Lewis on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Morning.
What this gentleman is alluding to is that the accountants, the accountants and the lawyers, they're Jewish.
Here we go. Now he's done it.
He's saying anti-Semitic stuff. Remember what just happened? They just had that war, not that war, but that incident with Hamas and the Israelis.
Yeah.
He's spewing anti-Semitic hatred. Your lawyers and your accountants are primarily Jewish people.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Thank you much.
Lewis is saying that's what he's saying, okay. Sort of caricaturing the profession and caricaturing Jewish people and then further caricaturing them by suggesting that they won't work with black people, which, of course, is just absurd. I can't even believe we have to have this conversation about a comment like that from the President of the United States. For all of the curious things that Donald Trump said, or at least the way he said them, that the media obsessed about, this is going to get a complete pass. And it's one of the most ridiculous statements you've ever heard. And that's really saying something considering the source. Mike in Union. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Hey.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep, we got you.
What he's doing is exactly what Mayor Lightfoot is. He's just going to shut down opposition, you know, like with the Republicans by painting them all as racist, as, you know, and the Republicans don't have any stones to stand up against this. It's all about suppression of opposition to move the policies forward by making everybody seem like a racist that doesn't agree with him. That's all it is. It's the old playbook, just like they did with Bush in Texas and all that other stuff. So,
thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, I mean this is just using other people, preying on people's fears, gaslighting them for political ends. That's really heroic. That's what leadership is, right? Jim in Crown Point.
Joe Biden on the Senate floor called black men predators. This guy has got to be insane because all this stuff that he brings out, he has participated in. He eulogized Byrd, the biggest racist. It's pretty funny. These Democrats use the missionary framework. You're our children, you know, and we're going to help you because you can't help yourselves. It's a narrative that's worked for 50 years, and it's going to have to stop.
Well, thanks for the call, Jim. I think that's generally right. This is the approach that's worked for half a century, and it's the approach that they need to work because what else do they have other than government? I mean, that's what the offering is, right? Government is here to provide for you from cradle to grave. Mm-hmm. And these are the people that are out to get you. We're your protectors. So you better stick with us. And as I've said before, you know, anytime the government takes real interest in you, they're going to provide everything that they think you need, or perhaps convince you that they're going to provide everything that you think you need. That's when you should be really circumspect, if not afraid, when they take such an interest in your survival and your advancement, particularly when it's as a group rather than based on your identity or part of your identity, as opposed to based on, you know, your particular skill set, a particular grievance you have. That's what's happening here. And it's been happening. It's just a lot of people know the history of the 1960s and the civil rights era. Fewer people know the history of racial massacres like Tulsa 1921,
well, we never
or
learned.
Chicago 1919.
Let me ask you this. Did you ever learn about it in school?
Yes.
You did?
I did.
Do you remember what grade you were in? I know this is a stretch, but I mean, were you in middle school, elementary school, high school? Because we never learned about it. We never learned about Japanese internment camps. We never learned about the
public
Tulsa
school
massacre.
System for you.
Lottie. Oh, that's right. You went to Bennett. How should I do your ass?
Yeah, well, actually, it's more embarrassing than that because I know I learned about Tulsa in grade school. Wow. Because this is about learning American history.
Yeah.
And this
sometimes
is the point.
Sometimes history isn't pretty.
Well, of course. Always history isn't pretty. And of course, this is what all of these academic charlatans and race hustlers want you to sort of miss, which is conservatives, people like me, they're not afraid of discussing any aspect of American history, the good, the bad, and the ugly. They are, because they're trying to rewrite it. And they want you to believe that 2021 America is 1921 Tulsa. And they need you to believe that for political power and all of the trappings that come with political power. And is it interesting, in all of the discussion of Tulsa and the massacre there in 1921, almost no reference to Tulsa, or to Black Wall Street in Tulsa. Black Wall Street during a time in America where the Ku Klux Klan was ascendant, as he described, and there was racism inculcated into the law. I mean, blacks were treated as second-class citizens under the law, and yet Black Wall Street in Tulsa. How did that happen? How did that happen, Joe? Because, you know, they couldn't get lawyers and accountants back in 1921, could they? Or is it just today?
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and I'm happy to report that for the first time since Chicago's emergency travel order last July, there are no states on the list requiring a quarantine or negative test for people coming in the city who are not vaccinated. Due to improving conditions and the ongoing uptake of the COVID-19 vaccine, no states are above 15 cases per 100,000 residents per day threshold.
Well, how are we going to celebrate, Dan?
So the update, 7 states were in the orange tier under the order, but those states, which included Colorado, Florida, Maine, Michigan, Minnesota, West Virginia, Washington, were moved to the yellow tier on Tuesday for those of you scoring at home. There's nothing in this news story that has any value for anybody because no one has paid attention to any of this since last July.
Well, Dan, I'll tell you, it's so sexy when you talk about tiers and mitigation.
The color codes.
And color code. I mean, nothing. Ladies, that's real hot. If you want to date with Dan, I mean, really, that's good. But, these are very exciting times because this, she had a news conference yesterday saying this.
There are states that are over that 15 daily cases per 100,000 mark.
It's a good day in Chicago. You could be free now. You could travel anywhere you want. Which is funny because people actually listen to this travel ban nonsense. I know of 2 families that were supposed to go to Florida last year. They canceled their trip because they didn't want to quarantine. But they didn't want to quarantine because they didn't do it for fear of COVID because they knew they weren't going to get it. And if they did get it, they'd be fine. They did it because they actually thought that somebody was going to go to their house and make sure that they're in their house quarantining because they went to Florida. I mean, people were brainwashed. I mean, I never stopped traveling, and I know that you never stopped traveling. And we just, governed ourselves and took precautions, when you needed to, if you had washed your hands, blah, 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 mask up on a plane, whatever. But people actually listen to this, so people are actually celebrating this today. Because we've had...
I don't know who any of those people are. I'm sure there are. I mean, there are, again, these are the people who are reminiscent of the... a Japanese intel officer who was assigned to the Philippines and had not been told that World War II ended for 29 years. He didn't come out. He didn't know that World War II ended until 29 years after the fact. That's some of these pandemic COVIDians in places like Chicago. I understand that. But, I mean, for the most part, for the rational person, for the serious person, for the adult who has things to do in this life, no one who fits that description has paid any attention to this. This has been play acting and like a drama group for politicians and the media and for a few others.
And for doctors. I mean, this is their Super Bowl, like Dr. Emily Landon. This is, her dramatic moment in the spotlight. And for Dr. Wardy, I think I don't know how she's going to let go of this either because, every day that we reach a milestone, there's a press conference.
That is the lowest number of new COVID cases that we have had since the beginning, March of 2020.
We have less. They dropped 38% from last week. We had 152 cases and 8 deaths yesterday. In New York, they had 0 COVID deaths. In New York City and the entire state, 0.
Yeah, but go slow. Make sure you maintain those vaccination, unvaccinated seating arrangements at the stadiums and whatever the current strictures are at restaurants and so on and so forth. Take it easy. Don't rush out. We're still under threat. There are still variants out there.
Yes, there's variants. And then the bird flu. There's a different strain of bird flu in China, blah, blah, blah. But it's
yeah, we
nothing.
Should lock down.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, we're not. Yeah, but so 42%.
Not an abundance of caution.
Stop it. 42% of Chicagoans have had both vaccinations. 52 have had one. But we got to get to 70, Dan, or we're not going to get over the COVID bridge to phase 5 La La Land.
Our goal is to try to get to 70% of adults having gotten at least the first dose by the 4th of July.
And then by the 4th of July, we could be free.
It's going to be really interesting how this plays out because there's going to be a significant cohort of the American population that does not get vaccinated, that refuses to, and how that's going to play out with respect to authorities, both private and public.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, I talked to some friends yesterday. They were at Humble Park. They said there were people are just coming up to us. Hey, have you been vaccinated? If not, they have these mobile units now. And if you go inside the mobile unit, get vaccinated, you get 5 Great America tickets. And that's they're not busy.
We've heard.
North Avenue Beach. They were there at North Avenue Beach. They're trying because people and they're shutting down vaccination sites. They're shutting down the one at Wrigley Field. They're shut down the one at United Center because people have stopped going to get vaccinated.
They didn't stop. The people who wanted to get vaccinated did get vaccinated, and the people who didn't, didn't. So now what? Now how is society going to be ordered? I mean, the EEOC ruled, promulgated an opinion that employers can require employees to get vaccinated. Some of that's happening, and some employers, friends I talk to, it's you're given the option, but they're really putting the squeeze on you to get vaccinated. So how is that going to play out between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated in the coming months? And again, not just at the hands of government, but also at the hands of your employer, your kid's school, and so on and so forth. Remember all the hullabaloo about New York City declaring that they're going to have in-person schooling come the fall.
Yeah, with no remote.
But it's still with masks and social distancing and all the other ascientific silliness. At least for now, and there's always the right to claw back and return to a state of cocoon if they so deem it. So the idea that we're out of the woods with the power expansion that has occurred for politicians and frankly employers, I don't think so. And I think there's going to be moments here between private institutions and those who patronize them or those who are part of them, as the example of the employer-employee relationship. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that also includes churches.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Cardinal Supich.
Oh, gosh. We talked about that yesterday because I wanted to know what you think about that.
Ooh. Yeah, as serving as a sentinel of the state, as he's wont to do, a Catholic can enter parish churches without masks, but they have to show full vaccination. And I know parishes that are not going to require their parishioners to show their papers, and others, yeah, I'm sure, will comply, including probably Holy Name to begin with. The Archdiocese also permitted parishes to choose a second option, continue to require Mass for all attendees at Masses and liturgies until we reach Phase 5, your magic Phase 5
yes,
you were describing.
Yes, thank you, to La La Land, yes.
That is really I can't say it's astonishing because I know who Supich is, and I've seen how he behaves, and so he's serving as a sentinel of the state. He's no different than, he's no different than any other Chicago politician because that's what he is, first and foremost.
Yeah, our Episcopal pastor said we are not having vaccinated and unvaccinated sections. We're not having masked and unmasked right now, but the ushers have to ask you if you go to the Catholic Church. They have to ask you for your card, or if you have to take a picture of it on your phone. Or else you can't take they're policing
we just covered this.
But
some will do that and some will not. That was the edict from Supich. We'll see how that gets enforced. But that edict alone is chilling because of, again, the church folding into the state. And I'm not just talking about the Catholic Church, but talking now specifically about the Catholic Church. That is really a dangerous circumstance. But it's been ongoing on a number of fronts, and this is just the latest.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
By the way, it also puts people in a difficult position. I mean, you don't want to start off going to Mass with a lie. So I'm not going to ask for your papers, but did you get vaccinated? Oh. Because if not, you have to wear a mask, and people are going to say what? They're going to wear their mask, which is silly. Or they're going to lie to a church elder that they don't have to wear a mask. This is the different public lives versus private lives sort of Stasi culture that the left promotes. It's none of the church's business, really.
I mean, that's personal between you and your doctor and you and yourself. My choice, my body.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, this is pretty simple retort to that. This is a communal setting, so it's the same argument that's used for churches or businesses or any other setting. But should the church be in that business?
Supich was the first one out there to do it.
Of course he was.
Yeah.
Of course he was, because he's a politician who sort of part times as a faith leader. Joe in Hoffman Estates, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. I have just two quick observations. One is, did you notice that Democrats and liberals seem to always live in constant hysteria and fear about everything? And two is, there's a correlation for some reason between Democrats and sexual deviancy. For an example, the teaching kindergartners how to masturbate.
Is it
just me, or is it, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's something that's very odd with liberals.
Yeah, I'd say. Well, but thanks for the call, Joe. But it's pretty straightforward. The family and the church are impediments to the state, so they need to be deconstructed. And the sad thing is how many people are willing participants in that deconstruction, including the supposed protectors of those institutions, the principals of so many of those institutions. Isn't it remarkable? Good letter, too, by this guy, Justin, what's his last name? Mawakizi, I believe is his name. It was posted to Twitter to Supich directly on this matter. And I just thought, you know, pertinent part here. Let me get to it. Hold on one second. But I'd like to hear from people, too, about what's happening at their church as recently as Memorial Day weekend and what they expect to happen, what they're going to do if you have to show your vaccinations, not just for the Catholic Church. If you have to show vaccination papers
at a
solemn gathering like a mass or a service.
Or even a wedding. We know some people who got married last weekend, and they told the bride and groom, you have to wear a mask down the aisle. Well, do you think they want to take their wedding pictures with a mask on after they spent $10,000 on a dress? And Dan, I know how much you love weddings, because love is patient, love is kind. And they didn't do it. They got to the church, you know, they made the donation to the church, and as soon as they got to walk down the aisle, they took their masks off because they've been vaccinated. And most of their guests had been vaccinated as well. So, and I know we had a call yesterday from a man from Rockford who said the archdiocese there of Joliet, or no, in Rockford, and it goes to part of Aurora, they're not wearing any masks. And they're not asking people for the private information of vaccination cards because it's too much.
Mm-hmm. This letter from this Justin Mawakizi. Humbly and respectfully, Cardinal Supich, I request a reconsideration of the recent announcement of the Catholic Church to segregate their congregants on whether one has received a vaccine or not. This will impact family unity when one of the spouses has valid reasons not to seek vaccine. These reasons will range from allergies to vaccines to active immunity from having survived COVID. Not just that, but parents who have taken vaccines will be allowed to remove their mask while requiring their children to keep masks on. What will the Catholic Church become if parents stop exposing their children to the meaning of mass, sacraments, and community? The current stance of the Catholic Church in Illinois, while trying to comply with Pritzker's emergency order, compels the church that you lead, Cardinal Supich, to become an arm of the executive branch of government, an enforcement arm, enforcing the rules that contradict the same agency's declaration being relied upon. The Archdiocese of Chicago just implemented coercive and segregation-era rules that will impact the attendance of Mass by observing Catholic families. It will impact financial receipts from congregants, although it may keep government financial receipts leveled or see them increase through Catholic Charities contracts. But one thing is for sure, the future of the Catholic Church will suffer from losing the next generation of Catholics who simply will stop attending Mass or not be as connected to the Catholic principles and sacraments. I think that's a good comment. And the reason that the next generation won't be as connected to Catholic principles is because the current leadership of the church, in so many respects, is also disconnected from those principles. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, perhaps Cardinal Supich, consistent with his service as a sentinel of the state, will adopt this innovation as the officially licensed host of the Chicago Archdiocese. A team of researchers from the Universities of Minnesota and Texas have developed a polymer wafer which bears a striking resemblance to the host used at the Catholic Mass. They predict could become the vaccine of the future. They find that the underside of the membrane on the underside of the tongue lent itself to absorbing the drugs very differently, so the delivery mechanism could be a host. So whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, you could get the COVID vaccination host at Sunday Mass or service, depending.
So no more jabs.
Right. Yeah,
but I see what you're doing. Like, he would not even tell you, and he'd secretly replace your wafer with
Replaced the coffee they normally drink with Folgers. It was something like that.
Oh my God.
Something like that. And by the way, the idea of designing a vaccination delivery mechanism in the form of a host, that's demonic. I don't know how else to describe it. That is just demonic.
They're looking to make money. They're going to keep this going.
To anyone who was at all confused as to whether or not this is a religion to the COVIDians, to the safetyists, a vaccination host.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So it's LGBTQ plus Pride Month.
Yeah. Did you get my card?
I didn't.
Oh, I must have sent it to the wrong address. I won't let that happen again, boss.
I'm not taking those cards. So how are you observing? Because you can't ignore it. You're everywhere you turn. This is being put in your face. I mean, even if you watch a baseball game, San Francisco Giants.
Oh, boy.
Will be displaying pride colors on the right sleeve of their home jersey and on the SF logo on their caps for this weekend's game against
the Cubs. Yeah,
they did. And again, just in case you missed it, and in case you're wanting to do something of a signaling nature as well, make sure you're updating to stay current. The colors, 11 colors now. The original 6 pride colors to signify inclusion and progression, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and purple, plus black and brown to recognize LGBTQ plus people of color, and
what?
Light blue, pink, and white to recognize people who are transgender. Do you have all that?
It's just the color code thing is off again. No, I don't get it.
It's too much
to remember.
It's a lot. Well, you got to get it right.
Well, Mayor Lightfoot, she's going to join city leaders to launch Pride Month today with the groundbreaking of an AIDS garden in Chicago.
Okay.
South Belmont Harbor, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is nice.
Because they can't have their parade because of COVID. They're moving it to October 3rd.
This is important, that the signaling and the celebration. And, you know, what harm is it? The same thing when it comes to things like calling boys who are identifying as girls, girls, or girls identifying as boys, boys. I mean, what's the harm in it, right? What happens when one view runs into another view?
Well, if it doesn't go with their view, then you're screwed. Like, the breaking point for my boys yesterday was tampons in the boys' washrooms.
This is nothing
through
new.
That's statewide.
It's nothing new. Men can menstruate. There's no question. Men can have children. We know this. So what happens? Because, you know, the feeling, oh, it's not hurting anybody. What's that hurting? What's the pronoun usage? Why do people like me make a big deal about it? Who's that hurting? What about tampons in the men's bathroom? Who's that hurting? This isn't hurting anybody. What's it to you? Right?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Now, it may mean that we're going to have to break a few eggs to be compassionate and empathetic and tolerant and LGBTQ plus compliant. We're going to have to break a few eggs. That means that Byron Tanner Cross, a PE teacher at an elementary school, Leesburg Elementary, and we're back, Loudoun County, Virginia, the wealthiest county in America. That means that Tanner Cross, the PE teacher, he can't have a job. But that's okay, because we feel good, right? It's fine, because what's the big deal? If a boy wants to be called a girl or a girl wants to be called a boy, what's the big deal? Why should we be concerned about what Tanner Cross's views are? What's the big deal? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Mr. Cross addressing the Loudoun County School Board.
We condemn school policies like 8040 and 8035 because it will damage children, defile the holy image of God. I love all of my students, but I will never lie to them regardless of the consequences. I'm a teacher, but I serve God first, and I will not affirm that a biological boy can be a girl and vice versa because it's against my religion, it's lying to a child, it's abuse to a child, and it's sinning against our God.
He's been suspended pending an investigation for his transgressions in addressing the school board. Here was, local news covered this, of course. Here was one parent's reaction. It's perfect. Center cut.
Personally, I feel like it doesn't hurt anyone to refer to someone by the pronouns that they want to be referred to by.
Right.
Oh, yeah, everyone says that.
So Who's right? Is that woman right or is Mr. Cross right? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I mean, I think it's admirable he serves God first. That is a real man right there, folks. Ladies, that's the kind of man you want.
Well, he can prioritize. He's going to be unemployed in this world. But, I mean, who's that hurting?
Is it really a problem right now with the pronoun thing?
If you don't want to get, if you don't support gay marriage, don't get gay married. Who's that hurting? Marriage redefinition. It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't prevent you from getting married as a heterosexual. So what's the big deal? Pronouns? You don't have to announce your pronouns. You don't have to tell people which pronouns you want to use. You don't have to use trans pronouns. So Z and G and all this. You don't have to do that. So what's it to you? No? Nobody has an answer. Why not? I guess that's the answer. Right? What's the big deal? Who cares? Doesn't matter. Luke in Maywood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's one thing to have the Force on me. Hello, Dan. Hi, Amy. Hello. It's one thing to have the Force on me. I don't like seeing men kissing in my face. I understand they do it, but they don't have to do it in my face. And putting tampons in a men's bathroom is only trying to force me, so I feel, to accept gay and lesbianism. I don't, but I can live with it. But I don't have to have it thrown in my face.
All right. Thanks for the call, Luke. Well, the only problem is they disagree. Thus, all of the events and signaling and press conferences and celebrations,
raids,
laws, the effort to drive any religious thought from the public arena, those little things. I mean, I don't know how many times to go through this. It just repeats itself. It's a different manifestation of the same thing. I would hearken back to civil unions, marriage redefinition, that path that we went on to the ultimate conclusion, which was inexorable once the premises of the left were conceded. And it all comes down to something simple. It's not hurting anybody. And then when it does, when you have to choose between a grade school boy who wants to be referred to as she and her, or Mr. Tanner there, the PE teacher, is that hurting anybody? Somebody's going to get hurt because both people can't win, you know, win. One side does not tolerate dissent, lives not in the truth, but in the redefinition of it, and the other side is promoting the truth. And so if you have to choose between truth and untruth, well, somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to be negatively impacted. So who's it going to be? Or are you just going to say, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? Why can't I say, what's the big deal about calling a boy? If big deal, whatever that means, is the standard. Is truth the standard, or is something a big deal? That subjective big deal threshold, is that the standard? What's the big deal? I love that argument. That's about as intellectually robust as, come on, man, what's the big deal? The big deal is you haven't thought through anything. The big deal is that you're a barbarian who is governed by your sentiment rather than reason. You are not pursuing the truth. You're pursuing the path of least resistance. And that's the sort of sentimentalism that leads to the gas chamber, as per Flannery O'Connor. That's the big deal. But okay. Tony in Downers Grove.
Well, Dan, this slow creep's been happening for a long time. And, you know, you can look at when gay people, and I'll point out females in particular, having children, being artificially inseminated, having children, and everyone's saying, well, this is normal, but don't they deserve to be happy? It's always cloaked in, don't they deserve to be happy? Mm-hmm. Sure, they deserve to be happy. But please don't tell me, and that's okay if they do it, that's fine. But you're telling me it's normal. You're telling me up is down, right is left, left is right. And it's been a slow creep, only now it's full throttle. It's in the educational system. And for those who think differently, we're on the losing side right now because people just aren't standing up. They're doing what that one clip did. Well, I don't see anything wrong with it.
Right.
There's a lot wrong with it. And we're just going to keep going down this path, and people are not stepping up. If I had a kid in high school and there were tampons in the boys' locker room, you'd have to – I would be front and center every day. But that's not what's happening. But and that needs to happen.
I mean, thanks for the call, Tony. Look, there are girls in the boys' locker room. Tampons? That's passé. There are girls in the boys' locker room.
But they're going through puberty, and they don't want to see that stuff. That's disgusting to them. What guy is going to use a tampon? Like, well, there might be somebody transitioning, or who knows?
I think you're missing the point.
I know.
There are girls in the boys' locker room, and you're talking about tampons. They're actual human beings.
Well, not every school has girls in the locker room, but they have tampons, Dan.
Not yet.
Well,
not every school has tampons either, but that's not the point. The point is that when you conflate tolerance with acceptance with celebration, which is what we've done, this is what's going to happen. It is going to happen. The optimism of the Abigail Schreiers and the Ryan T. Andersons notwithstanding, they're wrong. Tony from Downers Grove is much closer to the mark. When you concede all the premises, you will get to their conclusion. That's the path we're on. Mike on the south side.
Good morning, guys. There's definitely a convergence to beliefs that are going to have this pain on both sides. But the distinction is that the pain that the left feels is emotional, that they feel they're being inflicted upon by the other side, whereas the teacher on the right, his pain is financial or something tangible. And that's the real distinction there that needs to be addressed, because that is completely unfair. Your feelings don't trump my ability to feed my family.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. I think what you're saying is true, but that's not where this is going. It's not. It's more than just professional or financial. It's you're a social pariah. That PE teacher in Loudoun County, Virginia, he's going to be labeled a bigot. He's not fit for civil society. He's been suspended for saying, I love all my kids. I tell the truth to my kids. I serve my God. And that precludes me from lying to them. That's worthy of a suspension at the grammar school in Loudoun County, Virginia.
Well, he's
Which way do you think
life.
This is going?
I mean, that suspended, he'll probably eventually get fired. And then you think he's going to get another job easily? No.
Nickelodeon got in the act.
Oh, is this Blue's Clues? I love Blue's Clues.
Yeah.
Watched that for years with the boys. And Steve from Blue's Clues, who went on to be a rock star.
I'm not familiar with him, but
okay. He's the original Blue's, the original guy.
Happened upon this video, and this is perfect primer for your grammar school age kids in Illinois. You can have them watch this before they go off to kindergarten for their sex education.
Hey, Blue, look at all these families. Hi, families. It's time for a pride parade. Families marching one by one, hurrah, hurrah. Families marching one by one, hurrah, hurrah. This family has two mommies. They love each other so proudly. And they all go marching in the big parade. Families marching two by two, hurrah, hurrah. Families marching two by two, hurrah, hurrah. This family has two daddies, they love each other so proudly, and they all go marching in the big parade. Come on, friends! Families marching three by three, hurrah, hurrah. Families marching three by three, hurrah, hurrah. These papas are non-binary, they love each other so proudly, and they all go marching in the big hooray!
Yeah.
Wait, were they celebrating a thruple there?
Yeah, they're non-binary.
Are you? That is disgusting.
Yeah, it's all like,
that's not the Blue's Clues we used to watch.
It's like dancing in Gutenberg. It's three men and a baby. Hurrah, hurrah.
Oh my God, that's disgusting.
So what's the target age for Blue's Clues? I assume it's not men in their 40s like
no,
me.
No, yeah. And that concerns me that you're watching Blue's Clues, but that's all right.
Well,
we started, you know, 3-4 and going up to second grade.
Perfect.
Oh, my. That is not, why do they get political? Wow, things have changed in 10 years since I've watched Blue's Clues.
And so the grooming that's going on through media, through popular programs like this Blue's Clues and
through
Nickelodeon.
Our schools.
And then you get into the indoctrination in the schools. And then you think what's going to happen? You think that Mr. Cross there in Loudoun County, Virginia, has any place in 21st century America? Not if they have their way. That's clear. Tolerance, acceptance, celebration. It runs in one direction. The tolerance alone runs in one direction. There is going to be no time. This is going to be, you know, what they say, like this Nickelodeon propaganda is, thousand flowers bloom, which of course is Maoist. What they mean is what Mao actually did when he was in power, which is the purge. Larry and Bartlett.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Here's your really stupid question for the day. We've been told for eons that the majority opinion must always submit to the minority opinion. Well, apparently the minority opinion today is that boys are boys and girls are girls. So shouldn't the majority of people who are transgender just let us maintain our position and make it the straight position of the world?
Well, thanks for the call, Larry, but that's not the majority opinion. The majority opinion is XX and XY. The majority opinion is common sense. But it's being run over by a motivated minority. It goes back to what Tony in Downers Grove said, the unwillingness to stand up for what you know to be true. And that's all you need for a motivated minority to run roughshod. And that's what's happening. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Christmas just around the corner. I think I found a stocking stuffer for those who like self-indulgent tripe. So if you like Jim Comey's book, if you were a fan of Andrew Cuomo's tome on leadership, then you're going to love Expect the Unexpected by Dr. Anthony Fauci. 10 Lessons on Truth, Science, and the Way Forward.
Oh, my God. And it's probably going to be on the New York Times bestseller list.
The work will divulge Tony Fauci's life philosophy, quote unquote. Yeah. Centered around life lessons compiled from hours of interviews. It's going to be a real page turner. And for those of you that don't want the density of Tony Fauci's life philosophy, there's a children's book by a woman named Kate Messner, Dr. Fauci, How a Boy from Brooklyn Became America's Doctor. And it's, you know, it's got like cartoonish illustrations.
Yeah, I actually saw it, yeah.
So it's a perfect complement to maybe your Nickelodeon viewing with Blue's Clues. You know, if you want to get to propagandized on all the important topics. Dr. Fauci scholarship, the children's book, and the self-regarding tripe. Look forward to those. By the way, Fauci, as these more and more emails are being FOIA'd and released, starting to raise more questions about exactly what Fauci knew about what was happening with Chinese scientists. And may not exactly square with his flat denials of knowing anything about or sanctioning any sort of gain-of-function research by those Chinese communist-sponsored scientists in Wuhan. For more on these topics, as well as still the medicinal ones related to COVID, we've sort of stopped talking about those for some reason, not here, but generally speaking. We're pleased to be joined by somebody who's had his testimony before government bodies and talks or interviews sanctioned more often than we have been sanctioned by our tech overlords. He is Dr. Peter McCullough, internist, cardiologist, epidemiologist, and professor of medicine at Texas A&M College of Medicine. Go Aggies. Dr. McCullough, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Before I want to get to a range of topics with you, but just on Tony Fauci and sort of his outsized, I would argue, influence on the discussion, and not just in terms of the appropriate parameters of it, but in terms of where it's focused. You know, we can't talk about anything that Tony Fauci is not talking about or doesn't get much play. And of course, dealing with a pandemic, dealing with a communicable virus, this is a layered thing. There's a lot of issues, but how Tony Fauci's influence has impacted positively or negatively the discussion and thus the policymaking.
I think overall it's been a dark negative, and we're learning more and more details. Investigative reporters will put all this together, but in short, easily back to 2012, the National Institutes of Health, under his leadership, was involved in gain-of-function research, trying to make proteins on viruses more powerful, more able to let the viruses spread quickly and do more damage to the body. And the point, in fact, is this COVID-19 virus, part of it was actually strengthened in a lab so the human body can't handle it. The spike structure on the surface of the virus is where all the action is. And there's a cleavage joint there that the human body naturally cleaves to make it innocuous, like any other cold. is called the furin cleavage site. And what we've learned is they did research that we partially funded in that Wuhan lab to make that spike protein unbreakable. So this virus comes in the human body, and it goes ripping through blood vessels, causes blood clots, organ injury. It's because it was designed to be a killer.
But why would he do that? Why would you want to do that?
The most ready explanation is that this was an attempt to develop a weapon of bioterrorism.
But Tony Fauci says in testimony, the reason that we provide grant funding to our Chinese colleagues, for example, with respect to viral investigation and research, is because that's where the bats are, essentially, as it boiled down to in his exchange with Senator Kennedy from Louisiana. That's where the bats are. That's where these viruses, the bird flu, COVID-19, originated. And so if we want to understand origination, then we need to have a collegial relationship with our colleagues in China. How do you respond to that explanation?
I would say it's not where the bats are. It's where the risk-taking is. The risks that they were taking in that lab were extraordinary, and obviously it happened. It was either intentionally released. I look at it, I think probably somebody broke a test tube. First person that got infected, then spread it to a fish market. When that first paper came out in Lancet declaring that it originated out of a fish market, the first thing the reader would see would be say, wait a minute, a large proportion of these people never went to the fish market. So it couldn't have started here. Somebody must have gotten sick in that lab, and then it spread from there.
Well, three people were hospitalized that work in that lab. I mean, they had it so severely. Do you think it was one of them that maybe broke the test tube, allegedly?
There is patient zero that's described to be a fatal case. It's a woman, and it may have been her. I'm not an expert on the originations of the virus, but I would refer your listeners to Dr. Peter Bragan. His book is coming out. It's called COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. And it is available now in pre-release manuscript format. Some people are really following this. It has over 1,000 references, including referencing every piece of research they were doing and everything that Dr. Fauci was involved with during the development of this bioweapon. It's the only thing we can describe it as.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's doing the innocent bystander routine, and maybe that turns out to be true. But even taking his explanations in the light most favorable to him, it highlights the problem with this sort of funding and involvement with the Chinese. I'm not saying the Chinese scientists are bad people or not good scientists, but they're run by their Chinese communist overlords. And there's no way that we can have oversight that's reliable on what they're doing with in that Wuhan virology lab or with the resources that we provide. That seems to be the fundamental problem. It's just wildly Pollyannish at best.
Well, I've been over to China 5 times. I've never been to Wuhan, but it's a city about as big as L.A. And I can tell you the Chinese, I think, take good care of their processes. It's not as wild and woolly as you've seen. I originally went back there in the 1990s, and progressively over time I've seen their sophistication. It was Wikipedia-level knowledge a year ago that part of the funding that went to that lab came from the Chinese military. And if you put two and two together, one could assume that this was by design developing a weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah, and as Ross Douthat wrote in the New York Times, there's a pretty big difference between a world where the Chinese regime can say, we weren't responsible for COVID, but we crushed the virus and the West did not because we're strong and they're decadent, and a world where this was basically their Chernobyl, except their incompetence and cover-up sickened not just one of their own cities, but also the entire globe. It's a big difference, which is why and big implications, which is why the determination of origination is so important geopolitically in addition to medically.
It's almost as if there's a circumstance. Have you ever been involved in your house where you spilled something, you made a mess, and you're kind of embarrassed, and now you're trying to clean it up, and you try to clean it up, and you make it worse, and you make it worse. Yes. It almost has that sense to it, that this became a mess, And then one of the key people who was involved in the development of this is now overseeing the cleanup. And the cleanup, as everyone probably knows, has been an absolute disaster. I was struck by Steve Kirsch, millionaire, who put out an offer, a public offer on the internet, saying, if you can find one thing that the National Institutes of Health and CDC and World Health Organization did right in treating the viral infection, I'll pay you $2 million.
I'm going to take
and anything.
I'm going to take my vaccination money, my vaccination lottery money, and then I'll put that up to back his play as well.
And no one came. No one came.
Not one. Wow.
Not one.
We're talking to Dr. Peter McCullough. He's a professor of medicine at Texas A&M. And Dr. McCullough, one of the things that you've really emphasized in testimony before the Texas State Senate, a conversation I saw you have with Tucker Carlson recently, is the complete absence of discussion about therapeutics, about how we treat COVID infections. What happened to our focus on monoclonal antibodies and ivermectin and remdesivir and so on and so forth? The idea that, you know, we have therapy, we have flu shots, but we also have treatments for the flu. Why no discussion anymore about therapeutics just because we have vaccines?
That's true. So this virus looks like it was created. It kind of landed in our lab. I redirected all of my efforts. I'm a practicing doctor. I'm a professor of medicine. I'm the editor of two major journals. I've published more than almost anybody in medicine. I said, listen, if anybody can figure this out, I can, with a group of talented people. And I published the first guidance on how to treat the virus in August of 2020. We had it together. We had an update in December of 2020. We have a home treatment guide. The Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, we put this together. Basically, what happened without any recognition by our agencies is we rearranged America into four telemedicine services, one of which is free. It works by charity. And then 15 regional telemedicine services. And now, to this day, we are treating thousands of sick patients with COVID with multiple drugs at home in combination. And we are drastically preventing hospitalization and death. The vaccine hasn't had any effect. It's been early treatment that squashed the pandemic. The same thing happened in India. It got over control. They squashed it with early treatment. Same thing happened in Mexico City. Early treatment works, but it's a fatal infection. So we have to use multiple drugs in combination. Last night on Laura Ingraham, Dr. Steve Smith, infectious disease doctor, finally breaks through after all the suppression and shows, lo and behold, even in the ICU, hydroxychloroquine is dramatically effective. So all of our therapies that we stuck with from the very beginning actually work. Now, you mentioned the monoclonal antibodies. They are equally as approved as the vaccines, equally as approved. And you hear nothing about them on TV. They don't tell the patients where they can find them. Is there not a 1-800 number to get an infusion? Heck, President Trump got an infusion. Rudy Giuliani. Why aren't our agencies helping sick patients get to these life-saving infusions? In fact, there was a recent approval of an inpatient infusion. We can give in the first few hours of being hospitalized, absolutely silence in the major media. Silence. It's almost as if the only thing Americans get to hear about is the vaccine, in which the vaccine is applied to people who are not going to get COVID. Less than 1% of people who get a vaccine will ever come in contact with the virus. The vaccine cannot have any impact on this problem. If we have treatments and we focus on treatments, they have a massive impact because we're treating the small group of patients that are, in fact, getting COVID.
And so the full range of these therapeutics that were discussed and now those, I mean, you have practitioners like yourself that are actually employing them in service of patients, but they've sort of disappeared from discussions. So when people are looking and saying, well, I'm not going to get the vaccine if I get COVID or if I get COVID after having gotten the vaccine sometime down the road when my immunity is compromised, then where do I go? What should I look for? What do we know works? Because we've heard about all these different drugs and combinations and when you should take different drugs depending on the severity of your infection. And so beyond just saying consult with your doctor, what is, from your experience, what are things that have been particularly effective?
The best resource is the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons COVID-19 Home Treatment Guide. and that's available at aapsonline.org. It has a guide that lists all the protocols and treatments, and in the back it has the telemedicine services. So if the primary care doctor is not familiar or not comfortable or won't treat the patient, they quickly go to telemedicine services. The one that's run by charity is called myfreedoctor.com, myfreedoctor.com, and it runs 24/7. It's staffed 24/7, gets patients their medicines called in rapidly to pharmacies, and it basically is treating thousands of patients per day. This is an American success story that's completely suppressed in the major media.
It seems like the actual practitioners were able to be much more resilient and alter their approaches for better outcomes than were the public health professionals, the TV doctors. So, for example, I think about ventilators and then the decision. It seemed that, you know, ventilators were in many cases doing more harm than good. You shouldn't immediately be going to ventilators. There are other options. And so the medical community, in terms of actual practitioners, adjusted. That to me seemed like a good example of, you know, being outcome focused, where the public health professionals, and maybe we need to split our understanding of the medical profession, but between practitioners and the academics, the public health professionals just sort of staked out a position and stuck to it regardless.
I agree with that. That's the most dangerous form of bias, is basically just taking an intellectual stake on a position. It was pretty clear that our public health officials put a stake on two positions, wearing masks and vaccine. And there's actually two more things to look at. One is early treatment and then hospital treatment. And we should have had what's called the four pillars of pandemic response. We should have had that approach. I presented that to America in this U.S. Senate hearings on November 19th. I published this. We should have been on all four bases. And I think we should have had doctors who have medical licenses and who are treating patients. We should have had them leading the charge, and they should have been advising America on what to do. Instead, we have public health agency staffers. Many of them are not board certified. They don't have medical licenses. They've never actually ever treated a COVID patient. And so that's one of the reasons why Tucker Carlson reached out to me, and Laura Ingraham had Steve Smith on last night. At least Fox News is breaking through saying, listen, let's talk to real doctors who are taking care of real patients. And because they're the ones, the doctors are the foot soldiers here. The public agency staffers, NIH, CDC, and FDA, they are public servants. They serve patients and doctors. It's the patient and doctor that has the final priority. We have the final decision on what happens, not the staffers. And so we've misinterpreted all this. Someone asked me in an interview, they said, what do you think about the most recent ruling of the CDC? I said, ruling? Are they the Supreme Court?
Yeah.
I mean, the CDC says that the CDC says we should have less than 10% of calories and sugar and fat in our diet. Is that a ruling? No, the CDC gives casual, helpful, analytic recommendations, but it's the doctor and the patient we decide. We need to put the CDC, NIH, and FDA in their place. They are public servants to us, but we are the ones that make the decisions.
Absolutely. Dr. Peter McCullough, internist, cardiologist, epidemiologist, and professor of medicine at Texas A&M College of Medicine. Dr. McCullough, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and Wendell Cox is a noted demographer, and he went through the Census Bureau data to identify the five largest cities in the United States that's lost population over the last decade, as well as the cities with population gains of 20% or more, which, you know, may someday become among the largest cities. We'll see. The five largest cities in the United States that lost population over the last decade.
Oh, can I guess?
Sure.
Can we do the Detroit?
Yes. That's
New York
one.
City?
No.
Chicago?
Yes. Number five.
And that's number five, really?
Yeah.
And Detroit's number one, huh?
Detroit's number one. It's like playing Family Feud,
mm-hmm.
Survey says. And Baltimore.
Baltimore. All right. What else?
Long Beach.
Long Beach, California.
And,
okay.
And Milwaukee.
Really?
Yeah, on a percentage basis, yeah. Although, you know, we talked to Steve Moore, some of these numbers, you know, the census data strikes me as a little bit cooked. I don't have any evidence to prove that, but it just doesn't seem to square with a lot of the reporting and the sort of annualized data that we've talked about with respect to migration. But okay. So anyway, those are the five cities that have lost the most population over the last decade, five largest cities that lost population. And I mean, you think about Detroit, Baltimore, Milwaukee, Chicago. Gee, I wonder if there's any common attributes of those cities that might be driving people away. By contrast, the cities with population gains of 20% or more, you won't be surprised that they're in places like Texas and North Carolina and Florida and Arizona. But in addition to Fort Worth, Austin, Charlotte, Tampa, and Mesa, Denver, and Seattle. Now, remember, Washington State doesn't have an income tax. But it's not just taxes that drive migration. It's, you know, people live complete lives. So it's the quality of life. Then that includes the quality of institutions that are important to your life, whether it be schools or hospitals, you know, healthcare infrastructure and so forth. So it's always a more complicated decision than it's usually discussed in the media. But there are attributes and that you know, seem to be in common in both lists. And one is, with respect to those losing population, crime, public safety. Yeah. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by David Harsanyi. She's a senior writer for National Review and author of the book First Freedom. David, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
So one of those cities that has a crime problem, didn't make the list, at least not yet, for the 2020 census is Portland. And recently, despite the fact that Antifa, members of Antifa almost killed journalist Andy Ngo, recently the press has realized that there's something going on in Portland, and it has to do with this thing that was just an idea during the presidential campaign that now apparently has metamorphosized into a real thing, and that's Antifa and the violence associated and sort of lawlessness associated with Antifa in Portland.
Right, which, you know, anyone who was really paying attention knew was going on all year last year, and actually it's been going on for a long time in the city of Portland. You know, you have not just Antifa, you know, engaging in radical violence and ideology in general. You have just the city council cutting, I think it was $15 million from the budget of the police department. They don't have enough cops to patrol neighborhoods that need it most. And crime has just spiked this year, and the summer's coming where it usually spikes even more. So I think there were five times as many murders this year so far as there were a year ago.
And with respect to sort of the continuing incidents of violent crime in these major cities that we saw begin over the summer and continue into this year, there's no indication that there's going to be any policy change from these Democrat mayors. That's what we're talking about, biggest cities in the country. And so the political implications, I mean, there's a lot of suggestion that these mayors and some, in some respects, governors are cruising for a real reckoning come November of 2022. Now, that's still more than a year away, but it's really hard to change the trajectory when you've turned your city over to groups like Antifa or gangbangers like in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, there are some cities like Baltimore which have been on this trajectory a very long time and nothing really changes there. I mean, I grew up in New York, and in the 70s and 80s, or even the 90s, there were tons of, you know, there's crime. It was a dangerous place to be. And then finally, Rudy Giuliani was elected mostly because of certain neighborhoods in Staten Island and Brooklyn and elsewhere. He helped turn around the city, and it wasn't just him. There was gentrification going on and a sort of economic renewal, I guess. But in the end, they turned back to sort of liberals to run their cities, and you're back to where you are. So I don't know what kind of trajectory there would be as far as politics goes. The unfortunate trajectory, I think, is that I lived in Denver for many years as well, is that you have a lot of people fleeing Chicago and New York, but they bring all their bad ideas with them and then turn those cities into bad places as well.
So were you surprised at all with the recent turmoil and you know, bombings in Israel and Hamas, that Antifa is publicly backing Hamas and their actions against Israel?
Oh, no. I mean, the hard left, the far left, since going back to Marx, has always been on the side of people they believe are oppressed and against the colonizers. And also there's always an anti-Semitic element to it as well. When it comes to Israel and Jews, I think that anti-Zionism is just a new front for anti-Semitism in most places. And so I'm not surprised that the Squad or Antifa or any other sort of left-wing group is pro-Hamas. It's history says that's where they belong.
Or maybe even Black Lives Matter. The former, well, she's still a co-founder, but she recently resigned. Patrice Cullors, this is what she had to say about Israel at a 2015 Harvard Law, human rights campaign symposium entitled Globalizing Ferguson, Racialized Policing and International Resistance. I'm sure you missed that. Here's what she said.
Actions always. The other thing I'll say is Palestine is our generation, South Africa. And if we don't step up boldly and courageously to end the imperialist project that's called Israel, we're doomed.
And the imperialist project called Israel, and that's not why she resigned, because comments from past events are coming up. She resigned because, of course, there's internal heat, because she's living a relatively lavish lifestyle, it would seem, on all the corporate money that Black Lives Matter has raised.
Yeah, I mean, and this, her position, which is held by many people on the far left, is that Palestine, which is a non-existent entity until, you know, Israel allows that to happen, frankly, is all of Israel, not the occupied territory. It has nothing to do with the 1967 armistice lines. It has to do with 1948 and the creation of a Jewish state. What's incredible is that they call Israel an imperialist project and sort of frame it as a racist state. Meanwhile, Arabs who live in Israel have more rights than Arabs in any Arab country, liberal rights that matter. So it's a complete perversion of reality. I guess we shouldn't be surprised by the people who back and root for Hamas.
Do you see any rethinking of Black Lives Matter by corporate America in particular? I mean, the financing is key to what they're able to do and the impact they're able to have, as well as the influence they hold over the Democrat socialists. Any recriminations there that you're picking up on, or is this going to be they're just going to be more and more ascendant? The Marxists, who use race as their cover for Marxism in that party.
I don't know that I've seen any corporate backing away. I mean, I think that after last summer, there was a bit of a cool down, especially when you looked at polling about people's perceptions of Black Lives Matter. Once it turned violent in certain places, I think there was sort of people pulled back. But, you know, corporations are terrified to say anything or not participate. I mean, we all got emails from every company we ever dealt with supporting Black Lives Matter, sports, you know, leagues, et cetera, just like we have now with Pride. You know, people are very nervous not to participate. It's like, I don't know, you know,
right,
if you've watched Seinfeld, but it's like, who doesn't wear the ribbon episode,
right?
Yes, in Seinfeld.
Yes.
So everyone must wear the ribbon, and people are scared to speak up. But that doesn't mean that with, you know, there isn't, you know, latent, you know, worry about these sort of movements. I think there is. We'll see how that pans out. But no, I think corporate America, I mean, they're risk averse and they're cowardly most of the time when it comes to this sort of thing. So they do it or they think they have to.
It seems to me that conservatives would be better served, rather than decrying Black Lives Matter, is to amplify the comments of the Alicia Garces and Patrice Cullors and Ibram Kendis of the world. Give them broader platform. Make sure everybody hears them, so they can't sort of work in the shadows through institutions that are controlled by their fellow travelers the way that they do. I mean, if you hear what Patrice Cullors and Alicia Garza and Kendi and others have to actually say, it may, to borrow a term, wake some people up about just how silly and frankly dangerous their positions are.
Yeah, but I mean, it's very hard to break through to the majority of people because media is corrupt. Modern political media is corrupt, and they do not amplify or cover these things in the way that they should because they're also scared or that they're also radicalized. I mean, I think a lot of the young reporters today are, you know, far leftist as well. A lot of the journalism professors you see on Twitter, you know, they say things that are just absolutely insane in my mind. So it's very difficult to believe that that's going to change any time either, soon either.
I just, I know. I just don't know what else to do other than, I mean, if they can't be indicted with their own words, then, you know, I'm sort of at a loss. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, this is not, you know, Jesse Jackson used to shake down companies as well, and Al Sharpton did the same thing, and they said, you know, Jesse Jackson talked about Hymietown, and others said terrible things. And I think people are just nervous to be branded racist, and they're scared to make these arguments. It's sort of easy for me or for you probably, because we are sort of, you know, we're protected in some sense because we're in this world.
Right.
A person who just works in a corporation, for them to stand up, it's actually, you know, it's actually something they risk a lot and things that I don't risk. So it's difficult.
Well, right. But I suppose, though, that is this, I mean, as this radiates out, maybe if people knew that they weren't in a safe place by being silent. For example, there was this teacher going back to Portland, this eighth grade teacher named Catherine Watkins. Here's what she had to say on a Zoom call with her colleagues about whatever they were talking about. Well, in part, it was anti-racist, quote unquote, curriculum. Here's what she had to say about where this is going. And again, Zoom call with fellow teachers at this grade school she teaches at in Portland.
Well, Catherine Watkins, eighth grade humanities teacher at Cedar Park Middle School, and my pronouns are she, her, we, and us. I'm going to say something that's not nice and not sweet, but it's true. If you're not evolving into an anti-racist educator, you're making yourself obsolete in this field of profession. Our district is only getting browner and browner with our children. And so if, you know, obviously you can't change your melanin, all right, but you can change your mind so that you can actually function in a district that is full of BIPOC children. So if you're being resistant, I understand that, but you're going to have to eventually come to the light, because if you're going to keep with those old views of colonialism, it's going to lead to being fired because.
So maybe if teachers, grade school teachers around America heard what Ms. Watkins and her fellow travelers have in mind for the teaching profession, maybe that would alert them to say, well, if I, you know, obviously they can make the choice to go along, as many do, but if that's not what they want, got into teaching to do, that's not how they want to teach, you know, that's they're on notice.
It's authoritarian in the sense that they run the school and they don't let you have any choice over where you send your kids. I mean, if you're not rich, and then they tell you exactly what you have to teach. And then they tell the teachers they're going to be fired if they don't teach, you know, this Orwellian anti-racist curriculum. And, you know, and she sounds, I mean, no offense. I guess I do intend offense. She sounds dumb, right? I mean, she probably doesn't know what she's talking about. Yeah, I mean, you who might be educated on these things can't even fight back. You will be fired. So I don't know. I think that people will at some point, it will hit them what's going on. But parents are also probably pretty scared and not sure. Yeah, there has to be some blowback. Yes, I just don't know how it happens. And I think it will probably be pretty ugly.
He is David Harsanyi, senior writer for National Review, author of First Freedom, A Ride Through America's Enduring History with the Gun, From the Revolution to Today. David, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Over the weekend, Kamala bombed the Navy. This is what I mean.
And just ask,
oh God, her voice.
Any Marine today, would she rather carry 20 pounds of batteries or a rolled up solar panel? And I am positive she will tell you a solar panel, and so would he.
Please laugh. Anybody? Can somebody laugh? It's supposed to be a funny. See, she included the genders, different genders there, and then the Green Deal, you know, with the battery or the solar panel. See what
yeah,
she did
there? I picked yeah. up on that. It was almost imperceptible.
Yes.
Like being beaten over the head with batteries.
That was a horrible commencement speech, by the way. Just awful.
That's Kamala Harris insulting the Navy and then politely laughing along out of respect for the office. The Biden administration also announcing canceling oil leases in the Arctic while we're importing oil from Iran, the lead sponsor of terrorism in the world. It's interesting. And also just on the matter of green energy, good piece by Issues or over at Issues and Insights on those electric vehicles that are au courant.
Mm-hmm.
The birthplace of most electric cars is the Democratic Republic of Congo, a country where the diamond trade has helped finance civil war. The reports in the local news there say slave labor is feeding big tech's quest for cobalt, an element used in the batteries that drive the electric vehicles. So slave labor is not just for Nike or Kathy Lee Gifford anymore. Our children are dying like dogs, a Congolese mother whose son and cousin died while working in Congo's cobalt mine said. She and others have filed a lawsuit in U.S. federal court that insists companies are simply turning a blind eye to the egregious abuses that include children killed in tunnel collapses or losing limbs or suffering from horrific injuries caused by mining accidents in a country that contains, according to the UN, nearly 50% of the world's cobalt reserves. So there, again, we have it. You're going to have to, kill a few people, enslave a few people, otherwise create environmental degradation, but all in making sure that we get those Teslas on the roads for the rich woke in this country. That's Bidenomics for you. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined again by Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, economist, and Trumponomics author. Steve?
Good morning, guys. By the way, I have another one for you.
What?
So, have you guys ever heard of the prairie chicken?
The what? The prairie chicken?
The prairie chicken, yes. It's actually called the lesser prairie chicken. I think that's an offensive term to call it lesser, but it's called the lesser prairie chicken. And when I was in the Wall Street Journal, like 12 years ago, I wrote about this because the left has been trying to put this on this chicken, you know, because we're running out of chickens in this country, on the endangered species list. And why that matters is because, there are potentially hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres that would be set aside if the prairie chicken is designated as endangered. By the way, we have more prairie chicken today than we did 10 years ago. So it's not as if they were running out of them. But Biden, this last week, has asked the Interior Department to put the prairie chicken on the endangered species list. Now, why does that matter? Okay. Why should anybody?
No, I said why. What's the problem?
Okay. Because here's why. Guess what? The prairie chicken is in states like Texas and Oklahoma, and guess what? It's near oil wells, and so the Permian Basin is the largest oil well in probably the world, maybe outside of Saudi Arabia. Massive amounts of oil that we get every day comes from the Permian Basin. This will shut down hundreds of thousands of acres that could be used for drilling oil and gas. And it is going to further diminish. So you mentioned we're not going to drill anymore in Alaska, right?
Right.
Plus, we're going to now shut down some of the drills in the Permian Basin in Texas. And by the way, this has nothing to do with the prairie chicken. This is because the left hates oil and gas, and they're finding any excuse to disable these wells. And I'm still so angry to this day during that famous debate between Biden and Trump, when Trump turned right and looked Biden right in the eyes and said, "You want to shut down fracking?" And I said, "No, I don't. I'm in favor of that." of course, everything they're doing is shutting down oil and gas. And this, by the way, just to connect the dots here, there is a reason that the price of oil, of gasoline at the pump has gone from $2.10 a gallon to $3.10 a gallon. And it's because when you reduce the supply of something, you increase the price.
Well, right. And I guess we're not going to be able to rely on our friends, the Iranians, to make up the difference. Is that the concern?
Well, I know that, Iran and Venezuela and Saudi Arabia and OPEC countries, they're very reliable. I mean, we can count on them from our oil and gas. I mean, look, you mentioned electric cars. Folks, I mean, let's be honest about this. 1.5% of the cars on the road today are electric vehicles. 1.5%. Even if you were to start converting totally to electric vehicles, it would take at least 20 years, probably closer to 30 years to even get, half of those cars off of the road. And so you're talking about, even 20 years from now, still relying at least 60% on oil and gas to fuel our cars. We're going to use oil and gas. It's just a question of whether we get it from Saudi Arabia and Russia, or whether we get it from, and Iran, or whether we get it from Oklahoma, Texas, and Alaska.
But I thought we wanted to be independent, not, depend on foreign oil. But according to Reuters, over 1 million barrels in March came from Iran.
Well, yeah, I mean, you see, the problem, Amy, is you're one president behind. Yes, Donald Trump did want to make America. He didn't want to make America energy dependent. I used to talk to him. He said, I want to make America energy dominant. And we were becoming energy dominant. Now we're shutting it down. But we will be the leader in solar panels. That's the other thing. The solar panels are made in China, right? Mm-hmm. And the wind turbines are made in France and Spain.
Yeah, no,
it makes great sense.
We're going to have a lot of countries that we're going to have a lot of enemies we need to rely on, and a lot of countries we're going to have to rape and pillage in order to make the green dream possible. Lithium from Chile. It's never ending.
Yeah. Well, it's a terrible day when we have to depend on France for our
energy. Don't rely on the French. Yes.
You were talking about, in part, you're talking about getting to the point about supply chains, too. And with the lethargic getting back to work culture that we have because of, large measure, because of the enhanced benefits. That's not me saying it. That's Obama's economist, Jason Furman, saying it. You're talking about. I want to put this in the context of inflation. So the goodies don't start running out until the first week of September, so after Labor Day. And so you're going to have pent-up demand and not the supply to meet it going into the fourth quarter of this year. I mean, the coming back online that was supposed to be a mitigating event with respect to inflation, that doesn't seem like it's going to happen, at least not to the extent that it was argued by, people like Jay Powell.
Yeah. Hard to know where we're going with this. There's no question that inflation is really rearing its ugly head right now. I mean, I think we're going to get another lousy report on inflation for the month of May and June. So, there's no question. I mean, across the board, I tried to buy some airline tickets this weekend to go away this summer for my family, and I couldn't believe how expensive tickets are. Everything's getting more expensive, and Jay Powell keeps running around saying that we don't see any inflation. I mean, I'm like, Jay, get out.
Well, does he go grocery shopping?
Go,
I mean, what's wrong
store
with him? Everything's more expensive. Clothes, everything.
Yeah.
And the airlines, those prices have gone up. It feels like they've gone up 40%.
Well, that's right. And then lumber prices and try to get a construction crew. So this is an inflationary environment. I mean, I still think there's time for the Fed to just slam on the brakes here. But here's the other problem, Dan and Amy, which is the budget. The budget that just came out, which is a laughable budget, $6 trillion, $20 trillion in new debt over the next decade, which would almost double our debt, and $2.5 trillion of new taxes. And by the way, it was very funny. I dug up this New York Times headline from back about 3 years ago when Trump came out with his budget. And the New York Times headline was, Trump budget to cause the debt to skyrocket. And then I look at the headline on the New York Times this Saturday on the Biden budget, which, by the way, doubles the national debt. And you know what that headline was? Biden budget to invest in America.
Right. Yeah, of course. Well, Bloomberg was at least a little bit more honest.
They got it. They got it.
Wealth redistribution, not growth. That's the aim, and that's the budget, and that's the tax policy, including the proposed retroactivity on the capital gains increase.
Yeah, 43% capital gains tax that'll start, what, I think April 1st or April 31st. And look, I mean, this country is depending on like two senators to save us from this. And that's probably Joe Manchin and Senator Sinema in Arizona, because I don't think we can count on either of your two Democratic senators in Illinois to show any fiscal sanity. But this is a dangerous moment. This is a president who has completely lost his craziness. And, you know, I don't know who's in charge over there in the White House. I don't know. I don't know if it's Susan Rice or the chief of staff, but it's like the left has just infiltrated every single agency of the deep state, and they're coming up with these crazy things. They're prairie chicken, stop drilling in Alaska. You know, we're gonna give everybody more money for being unemployed than working. All these things, and they're piling up. I can't think of two or three smart things Biden has done on the economy in his first 4 months, but I could probably mention 100 stupid things they've done.
What is McConnell and the Republicans play with the quote-unquote infrastructure bill? They've, you know, the counter proposal, and they're $1.5 trillion apart. Is that just to look reasonable with the purpose of killing it, or are they really trying to reach a deal?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, my advice to Republicans and Democrats, just stop. Stop doing what you're doing. You know, we don't need $2 trillion. You know, we started this conversation talking about inflation. You want to see inflation go through the roof, Dan, Amy? Pass another $2 trillion debt bill. I mean, how are we going to pay for this with you know, dollar devaluation, right? We're going to print more money to pay for all this spending, and that will cause inflation. And I said it last week on your show. I'll say it again. The people are hurt the most by a dollar a gallon increase in gasoline, and the people are, you know, who are feeling the effects of the higher food prices and higher lumber prices, higher airline. I mean, do you think Tom Steyer or Bill Gates cares about whether inflation goes up to 4%, 5%, or 6%?
No.
Of course they don't. But for people living on a fixed income, and by the way, it is a tax, folks. Inflation is a tax on the money you earn. And Biden said he wasn't going to tax anybody who makes less than $400,000. It's a bold-faced lie, because we're all feeling the effects in the pocketbook of this inflation. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I get it. I'm wrong, and I hope that the economy flies high. I do think we're going to see a good summer as we will reopen. But, God, I mean, the policy stuff, I can't believe this. And by the way, I've been dying to ask you guys this. You know, what is your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Rocky Road.
You saw the press, right? You know what I'm referring to. That press conference where the reporters, Mr. President,
oh, yeah.
What's
yes.
your
favorite
ice cream?
Ice cream?
Yes. Can you imagine the press asking Donald Trump that?
Steve Moore, always offering good advice to the political class. Don't just do something, stand there. I like that advice.
Yes.
Steve
yes,
Moore,
yes.
Wall Street
Stop.
Journal columnist, Stop. Economist, Trumponomics author. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
And I like Rocky Road, too.
Bye. Have a great week. And Stephen Moore joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. .com on the AM 560 mobile app, on your Alexa-powered smart speaker, and on TuneIn, iHeart, and on Odyssey. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Time now for another reason why Dan Proft is single.
Yeah, I've stockpiled a couple. It's reasons, plural, today. We begin with the advice column from Slate, which is a left-wing rag. Maybe you can help out a leftist. Dear Prudence, I've been married to a great guy for 5.5 years. He's handsome, sexy, funny, and kind. It's true that he's always been a little prissy about illnesses, but I never thought it was a real problem. However, during the pandemic, his terror about getting sick has reached new levels. For the last year, he has refused to take off his mask, even when we are at home, just the two of us. This is true even now that he is fully vaccinated for the virus.
Oh, come on.
He wears it to sleep to do most of his bathroom activities, and yes, even during lovemaking.
No, 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 no. It's like the people who do the peace sign at church and they kiss each other with their masks on. I'm like, no, stop.
He says, what's the harm? There we go again. What's the big deal? There's no harm. He says, I know it's probably not necessary, but wearing it doesn't bother me. So even if there's a small chance it can protect us, I'd rather be on the safe side. She says, maskless and alone, I disagree that there's no harm. I want to see my beautiful husband's face again. I want to kiss him on the lips romantically like we used to and not through a piece of fabric. He does not change his mask very often,
ew,
and it is often smelly and
no,
soiled. This is making me depressed and concerned about our future together. I have asked him when he plans to stop masking. He says, when it is safe for everyone. What if this becomes a permanent part of him? My mother, who's very conservative, thinks that I should move out. But I don't think I'm ready for that step yet. What I want is my husband back. How can I get through to him, maskless and alone? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. What advice do you have for maskless and alone?
Well, Dan, after hearing that sob story, it really touched my heart.
Yes.
No, wake up, and if he's that neurotic, he's going to be neurotic about something else in the near future after he unmasks. So my vote is to leave him immediately and, you know, maybe change your cell phone number. Start fresh. You deserve better. Life's too short. You know, live with that.
The past 5 years, all a big mistake, cut him loose.
Yeah.
That's what you said.
Yeah, I mean, not a mistake. I'm sure they grew together and now she's grown apart because he's neurotic. And that's not right. That's a mental disorder. Do you understand? Like, he has been completely brainwashed. So congratulations, big government and you Democratic leaders. You did it. There's another one who's never going to unmask. Because there's so many people that are not unmasked in Chicago. Wait till you get back and you see, walk around. It's unbelievable how many people are still masked. And I have to stop myself from saying, you should get the vaccine. You know, right back at them. Like, you know, maybe, you know, you don't take your mask off. You should really get in line to get the vaccine. So, but anywho, what do you think she should do, Dan?
I don't care. The reason why Dan Proft is single that this highlights is because there are women that would marry a pee hat goof like this guy who says, I'll take my mask off when it's safe for everyone. That is a male impersonator. That is not a man you're married to. And the fact that that she would fall for this is depressing to me.
Oh.
That's what depresses me.
Okay, and that's why you're single.
You know why?
Sentimentality.
Uh-huh. Sentimentality going in both directions. All right, let me try another one.
Okay.
This is now the opposite way. This is with respect to a woman getting married. And this is the particulars for her bridesmaids. This was, released from somebody in the bridal party to the DJ who then posted it. Mm-hmm. I ran across a post from Reddit from a bridesmaid who needed to drop out of a wedding due to her being a size 12. It has screenshots of the soon-to-be bride's message to her bridal party. There's a list of demands her bridesmaids must adhere to in order to participate. The demands to be a bridesmaid in this bridal party? All bridesmaids must be in a size 8 or go to the gym to get there.
So rude. Well, it is her special day. She is the queen for the day.
I don't think it's just going to be for the day.
Bridesmaids are supposed to do exactly what the bride asks. No questions. You don't second guess her. And if you don't like it, then just tell her you'd like to go to the wedding as a guest rather than have a job. But that's pretty bad.
That's only one of them.
Uh-oh, what?
Nails cut short and no color. Shoulder length hair and straighten. If not shoulder length, get extensions. Fake tans are not allowed.
Oh!
No kids allowed at the ceremony.
Oh, well, okay.
And there's also a cover charge. She ends the message to the group by saying she's sending them all her Venmo information so the wedding party can donate $500 to her and the groom for their honeymoon.
$500? That's so she's setting a monetary limit on how much money they have to give her?
No.
Who is this person?
I think that's a minimum, not a limit.
Okay.
And by the way, this is an outdoor wedding in Kentucky in December. Okay. What do you think about that?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. I mean, you can't tell your friends to lose weight. If they're a size 12, you want them down to an 8? What, are you going to be checking her dress size, too? I would tell that girl to buzz off.
And from the guy's perspective, yeah. I'm sure guys are thinking, well, that groom,
oh, boy,
is in for He is in for quite the life of wedded bliss.
Can you say control freak? Whew.
He is going to live like...
Don't you feel sorry for him?
Like a Uyghur in China, I have a feeling. Yeah, that's right. So now the flip side is there are women like that that you think, I'm sure he thinks one thing, and this handling of the bridal party should indicate the other. So now, see, I've gotten it from both perspectives. You see what I've done there?
Yes, I see.
Mm-hmm. Now, the third one,
uh-oh,
and then we'll take your advice and commentary on all three case studies. The third one is some fat chick who took to the interweb to excoriate people who aren't attracted to big, beautiful women.
Yeah, because we're celebrating that now. The cover of, you know, Sports Illustrated, everywhere. No,
you're not allowed, listen, the takeaway here, you're not allowed to not be attracted to her.
Oh, okay.
Hey, bestie. You're wrong. I think it's time for another adult pre-K lesson. What do you think? All right, turn your listening ears on. Zoop, catch a bubble in your mouth. Good job. Okay, here's the thing. Having a preference is something like, I'm looking for a partner who likes kayaking or wakes up early in the morning or loves pizza. But when your preferences exclude an entire group of marginalized people, that's problematic. Okay, that's not nice. That's not a preference. If you lump all fat people in one group together as though they are not very different individuals, that's fatphobic. Just like lumping all black people in one group and saying, I don't like black people, is racist. And lumping all disabled people in one group and saying, I don't think people in wheelchairs are hot, is ableist. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Do you? She's fun.
That sounds like a good time.
Is that right?
I'm trying to see her picture.
Is that right that she's just speaking on behalf of all fat people in the world? You have to be attracted to them. To not be attracted to them is to be suffering from a phobia. Okay. It's tough sledding out there, is my point. Brad in the West Loop, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, clearly all three women are wrong in all three scenarios. You might take exception to the first one, but I'll explain it. The guy wearing the mask, it's an act. The woman actually ended up being crazy during the pandemic, and he saw through it because they were living together nonstop, and he's just using this to force her to file for a divorce.
Oh, really? Oh, it's just a nice cover story. He doesn't. He wants her to make the first move.
I see there.
Could be.
Reverse
could
psychology.
Be. Could be. Hmm. Although he could also be a P-hat, too. Remember, this is a couple, or a woman, at least, that's writing to Slate magazine for marriage advice. Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. Hey, you know, when I listened to stuff like that, I knew a long time ago I wanted no part of marriage, and so I've been happily single my entire life, and it's great. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I did notice were all my friends who got married, the only two couples that got married, I mean, I'm 64, so you know, a lot of people in the 20s and 30s, the only two couples in state that are still married are the couples that did not have kids. Everybody else who had kids, long divorced, and they were all madly in love at the time of their wedding. So I don't know if that means anything, but I got to tell you, single life is the way to go.
All right. Thanks for the call, Rick. That's Rick's lived experience, and we must treat that equivalently to everybody else's lived experience. Remember. I should have asked him about the fat phobia, the question. I should have asked him about that. Is that right? What do you say to that? What do you say to that big, beautiful woman who demands that you be attracted to her?
Because if you're not, then you're fat phobic.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's a little cray cray. It's in her eyes, Dan.
So I just
another control freak, ladies. Come on.
I just can't afford the the dining out bills. Maybe.
Oh,
about that?
Dan.
That's not. Dan. It's a financial issue.
That's rude.
Mike in Rutherford, Texas.
Good morning. What you're seeing here is the ascendancy of the current culture and the emasculation of the American male. to the one that married the guy with the mask problem. Lady, you didn't marry a man. You married a sissy. Stop dating guys that sip lattes and go get pedicures with you.
I agree. Thanks for the
and
call,
don't,
Mike.
Yeah, and don't have as long of hair as your wife. Get rid of those man buns. Ugh.
Yeah, but it's the soy boys, whether, you know, regardless of their hairstyle. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a whole, that's a whole culture now.
I know.
And there's very few
men. I think
men.
They're so woke.
Vincent St. Charles.
Morning, guys. The man bun, I can't figure it out. The only thing I can think of with the mask and the lady, girl at the end is money. That's got to be holding them to somebody, because no one would take to be with someone. He's a lunatic with the mask. If you can't take it off, it's money. And then I have a question. Yesterday I was eating lunch and I was outside and I seen two adults with the child, about 8 years old, with a mask on, and the two mm-hmm. adults didn't have a mask on. Why would that be outside walking?
Because Dr. Fauci, and everybody listens to St. Fauci, said kids have to stay masked up until they're vaccinated, which is bull jive. Parents should govern their own children and know that the transmission rate outdoors is none. I mean, they said it was 10%, then they changed it to 0.1%. But go find
a
case.
Really sad.
It's sickening what we're doing.
It was horrible. Two adults without and the kid with bad. All right, thank you guys. Love the show.
Thanks.
And real quickly, yesterday I was at Mariano's, and there was a mom and two girls, and I was walking down the aisle, and they, you know, were turning the corner, and they gasped like, and I said, it's going to be okay, you know, because they almost touched me. Like,
We're talking about relationships, not masks.
Okay, well, the masks were part of the relationship.
Well, that, in that case, but
just
unless you have something
psychotic
productive
behavior
to
everywhere.
Say.
I'm saying that the people are psychotic everywhere about these masks.
Well, yeah, I know. But now the question is, how do we save that marriage?
We don't, because she didn't marry a man.
Dawn in Plainfield.
Yeah, good morning. To the couple, number one, the guy's lost. He's never coming back. Or he's using the mask because he really doesn't want to kiss her. Something isn't right there. And to the wife or the bride that wants all of these restrictions about weight and hair, I would suggest that she go call the Rent-A-Bride service that Amy had talked about a few months ago.
Yeah.
I think that would be the way to go. What do you think, Amy?
Yeah, Rent-A-Bridesmaid. That would be the perfect scenario, the perfect case to use.
No, but you're missing it. This is the problem with you, ladies. You don't listen.
Oh, are we frustrating you, Dan?
The guy just needs to run now.
Oh yeah.
Well, I know
go.
The guy needs to run. That's obvious. But with her, she's saying $500 per person cover charge. She doesn't want to outlay money. She wants to make money to finance the honeymoon that I'm sure she's meticulously planned with specific instructions for her husband and how he will or will not enjoy it,
and where they will sit on the plane, and what kind of hotel room they'll stay in.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dawn. Appreciate it. All right, well, there you go. Women attracted to male impersonators,
mm-hmm.
bridezillas,
yes,
and women that demand that you must be attracted to them.
Sounds great.
Three reasons why Dan Proft is single.
And that's another reason why Dan Proft is single.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, you've been teasing it all morning, so don't keep us in suspense any longer. What has happened to
Cotton?
Morton Grove's Cotton the pig.
Well, Cotton's a 6-year-old, 70-pound pig, and you saw pictures of it. It's so cute. And the owners, the Minx family, he's a lovely animal, domesticated, just wonderful.
I love Cotton, and I've taken care of her since she was a baby.
And she doesn't bark like a dog.
She's a good pet. She doesn't bark.
Right.
She doesn't, go on other people's property.
And they were distraught because
she doesn't
one
neigh
neighbor,
like a horse.
Yeah, but one neighbor called and complained after 6 years. And so they had a hearing yesterday. The courtroom was packed, Dan, you know, because people love their animals.
Farm animals.
Pigs. Yeah, one lady was there with a sign that said, "I'm just a gal that loves Cotton," with a picture of Cotton. And they decided to let Cotton stay because it was spayed, and it does not. They're not going to raise it for food, and removing the animal, the judge said, would cause distress to the owners. The only thing is, they can't walk Cotton down the street anymore that they used to. They can't walk Cotton on a leash. Cotton's got to stay in their backyard, so that kind of stinks. Because every time Cotton went out, all the kids would run, and and, you know, have, yeah, Cotton's, he's been, it's home confinement for Cotton, basically. But and then they had to prove, too, that they were not, again, raising him to eat him, which they wouldn't have done. But, again, just one neighbor complained.
Yeah, get one of those electronic monitoring bracelets from Cook County Sheriff's Police. Then you can go out and do whatever you want. Cotton can go commit crimes.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Professor Ibram Kendi, a.k.a. Henry Rogers, is the most prominent race hustler in America today. His How to Be an Anti-Racist is a bestseller that's being incorporated into curricula in schools across America. And he's at the Aspen Ideas Festival, and he's asked a simple question. What is racist? What is anti-racist? And this is his answer, proving not only that his whole ideology is a fraud, but that he couldn't even pass a philosophy 101 class. Listen to this circular reasoning.
You talked about the importance of defining racism, but I unless I missed it, which is possible, I didn't hear your personal definition. Is there one that you would offer us? Like, how do you define racism?
Sure. So racism, I would define it as a collection of racist policies that lead to racial inequity that are substantiated by racist ideas.
What?
Sure. A collection of racist policies that lead to racial inequity that are substantiated by racist ideas. And anti-racism is a pretty simple using the same terms. Anti-racism is a collection of anti-racist policies leading to racial, anybody want to take a guess? Equity that are substantiated by anti-racist ideas.
What is racism? Racism is racism. See, he circular reasoning is when you start at the end of the thing you want to get to the end of. Racism is racism. What's being a racist? Racist things that lead to racist policies that lead to racist outcomes. That's not an explanation. It's not a definition. That guy could not pass a philosophy 101 class, and he's supposed to be the leading light of racial thought in America.
He just thinks it sounds good, really.
It's absurd. And this is how it manifests itself in schools around America, as we've talked about quite a bit. The latest example being a Las Vegas charter school named Democracy Prep, apparently named so ironically. They took over this outfit out of New York, took over this prep school in Las Vegas about 5 years ago. Modified the school's civics curriculum to place heavy emphasis on intersectionality and critical race theory. All students are now required to take the year-long sociology of change course. The class materials mandate students label and identify their racial, religious, sexual, and gender identities, and then determine whether that part of your identity has privilege or oppression attached to it. The course also obligates students to label white, male, Christian, and heterosexual identities as inherently oppressive and privileged. The course's teacher has labeled her own race as privileged, her gender as oppressed, her agnosticism as oppressed, and her bisexuality as both privileged and oppressed.
There's a lot going on there.
The class content also informs students that reverse racism is not real. A young man named William Clark began taking the course in the fall of last year. He protested the mandate to announce his identities and then characterize his identities as so required. William Clark is biracial. His mom is black. His dad, who's now deceased, was white. And he and his family taking that school to court, saying that that course and the mandates associated with it are a violation of West Virginia v. Barnett, which I think is a pretty actually innovative legal argument. For more on this case, we're pleased to be joined by Gabrielle Clark, who is William Clark's mom. Gabrielle, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
So it sounds like, you know, William, well, rather than assuming anything, tell me how William reacted when he was thrown into this course as a senior.
Well, like most children in America that have come across this, he didn't tell me anything about it. I didn't know anything about what was going on until I saw some concerning things happening in my daughter's class. And when I saw that, I went to William and I had asked him what kind of things were going on in his class. And that was when he told me. Now, before I ever looked into it, he had already pushed back. He had already refused to complete the assignment that he felt like were too invasive and were discriminatory and divisive.
Well, what was the assignment that he had to do?
The assignment, the biggest one, the big thing that really kind of prompted him to just kind of, I don't know, disregard the teaching in the class was an assignment where he had to list his identities, his race, gender, sexual, religious, and disabilities, and then attach labels to those identities. And in attaching these signifiers, he would have to, you know, categorize himself as an oppressor and privileged.
Right.
And he was not going to do that. And I was not going to allow him to stand alone in that. We spoke with the school. They would not give us a remedy. So we pushed forward. Nobody is going to violate my kid's civil rights and get away with it without some challenge.
I think
that more parents need to do that.
There's no question about it, and it's a great example that you're providing both for your son as well as for other families. What did the teacher say when he pushed back?
Well, all of the chain of events are in the court filings, but essentially we got in touch with the school. We told them, you know, we gave them our position, and they would not give us a remedy. So we took the necessary action, and we filed a lawsuit in December. And recently, they have since conceded on those points, and they have allowed him to opt out of the class and allowed him to be on track to graduate. And our situation is not unique. It's happening all over the country, and more parents need to push back on it. Our family dynamic is the exception that proves the rule of why this doesn't work in America.
Right.
America is a very diverse nation. And even in our household, I am biracial. My mother was black. My father was white. And my first husband was black and my second husband was white. So some of my kids are three quarters black and some of my kids are three quarters white. So my white kids are oppressing my black kids.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Are you kidding me right now?
Well, you right. lived, yeah.
Same kids that live in the same household with the same mother. That's absolutely ridiculous.
That's a good point.
And we're just not going to, we're not going to tolerate this nonsense anymore.
Well, Gabrielle, in your lawsuit, you allege that there's permanent damage to your son's academic career. Can you tell us in what way?
Well, you know, William should have been able to go to whatever college he wanted to, but instead he's had to deal with this situation all year. And, you know, not only that, but there were scholarships and grants and all of those kinds of things that he could have applied for. But, you know, with a failing grade throughout the year, that made it pretty much impossible for him to be eligible for those things. So, you know, it's unbelievably ridiculous that we even had to deal with this situation. But it's even more disgusting to know that all along they could have just let us opt out of this and let him go on about his life. But you know,
so So they failed him first and forced you to litigate, and then they backed down in the face of a lawsuit. That's what happened.
They backed down after the most expensive temper tantrum in all the world happened.
Yeah,
you know, that's the kind of thing, that's what they're counting on. That's the reason why this has gone so far in America, because people are afraid. They're afraid to be called a racist. They're afraid to be canceled. They're afraid of the enormity of it. I mean, this has received international attention all over the world. I mean, I even talked with a guy in Helsinki, okay? That's the breadth of what is happening here. And so it's just, and not only the financial burden that it places on people to have to defend the rights you are born with. William's middle name is Martin because he was born on Martin Luther King Day of that year. I've raised my kids to live out the tenet that Dr. King set for us, to judge people by the content of their character and not by the color of their skin. And so we felt like no matter the cost, no matter the expense, no matter the recognition, no matter the enormity of it, we just were not going to allow this. I mean, just for my son, for him to be able to move through his life knowing that he did the right thing was important. But just so that this kind of thing just stops, he felt like, and I agree, that we needed to press call.
And how did that play out with your daughter, too? Is she at the same school?
I moved my daughter to a different school that mm-hmm. day that I found out what was going on. And we talk, you know, I talk about my daughter sometimes in this whole thing, how it all comes about in this whole thing, and how everything kind of comes full circle for us is why this does not make sense. This critical race theory ideology, because my daughter is the most accomplished person in our family. She's only 13 years old. Okay. She goes to an elite ballet academy where she has a full scholarship, a 10-year scholarship. And she just won the science fair in our city for the number one inventor in the city. Okay. And her invention didn't even work, but the design was so good. They had to give her the award. I mean, that's the kind of thing, and my daughter is a black woman, by all intents and purposes. So she shouldn't be able to succeed underneath William, who is, you know, a white male. I mean, that's the kind of ridiculous idiocy that we're talking about here.
Totally.
And, you know, I reached out to No Left Turn in Education. We do not have a chapter in Illinois, but we are working on opening one. I reached out to Dr. Elena Fishbein after having seen her on Tucker Carlson, and she obtained legal counsel for me, and we have been powering through ever since. And if anyone is having any kind of issue like this, they can go on the Facebook national chapter for No Left Turn in Education, or they can go to our website at nolefturn.us and send us an email and let us know what we can help you with. We have a coalition of lawyers. We have a coalition of teachers. We have people working on legislation. I mean, we are a grassroots operation that is we have several about two dozen chapters all over the country. And if there's not a chapter in your district or in your area, get in touch with us. And we will, and you can start one in your state. You can start one in Chicago. This is happening everywhere, and we need everybody.
No, it's excellent. NoLeftTurn.us is the website, right?
That's it.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because I think that biracial families or multiracial families are really going to lead the way on this. I mean, your story is reminiscent of this documentary that our friend here, friend of the show, Eli Steele, did, How Jack Became Black, talking about getting his kid enrolled in the L.A. Unified Public School District and Jack's, you know, identity is like black, white, Jewish, Native American, His father, Eli,
Latino as well.
His father's deaf. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, so which part of my, you know, and you want me to check boxes. So which part of that identity is supposed to be more important than the other? And then it applies to these courses, like that ridiculous course your son that was imposed on your son. So I'm part oppressor. I'm part victim. I'm part this. I'm part that. What that informs me and my life and how we get along with one another. How? It is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And Eli is a trusted and fierce ally. I did a panel on school choice and the damage that critical race theory has done with his father Shelby Steele and Ian Rowe some months back. And you know, these are the kinds of people we need to be listening to. Not these race hustlers and race baiters and all of that other nonsense. You know, we need to move forward with amicably, with looking at all of the things we have in common, not all of the things that divide us. You know, diversity is supposed to be good. It's not supposed to set us apart and separate us and pit us against one another and give us, you know, give some people a sense of entitlement and give some people a sense of submissiveness. You know what I mean? These are the kinds of things that we need to be working together to improve. While they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on buying this racist curricula, they could be putting that into literacy programs. You know, how many black children graduate from high school without knowing how to read at college level? I mean, that is the kind of thing that we need to be focusing on, not, you know, whether or not I can go to the store and buy a Band-Aid that matches my skin color. That's foolishness. You know what I mean? I have long eyelashes, but that hasn't gotten me anywhere in my life. I can just bat my eyelashes at any, and they're going to do what I want them to do. You know what I mean? Your appearance has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not you succeed in life. So this whole issue is really ridiculous, and the indoctrination absolutely needs to stop. And no left turn. We believe in education, not indoctrination.
Well said. NoLeftTurn.us is the website if you want to start a chapter, or if you have a situation with a son or daughter like Gabrielle did and need some help. NoLeftTurn.us. Gabrielle Clark, thanks so much for joining us, sharing your story. Glad to hear William and your daughter are doing great, and really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, and she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's morning answer on AM 560, The Answer.